Brachos, Daf Mem Gimel. We are towards the top of Mem Gimel Med Aleph at the two dots. Hesebu Echad Mevarech. Once they're in a position of Heseba, so then one person can make a bracha for everybody. The Mishnah gave us the ground rules in terms of the ability for one person to make a bracha on behalf of other people, so that all of them can be Yotze with that one bracha. And the Mishnah's idea is that as long as they're in a situation of Kvius, so then one person can make a bracha on behalf of others. The idea of being koveya is that we're established and everybody is able to pay attention to the one making the bracha. The position of kviyas taught us the Mishnah was a sable. One has to be in a reclined position. In the day, when they had a meal, so all of them would be sitting in a reclined position, not the way we are seated upright, but rather totally reclined. This is a sable. Of course, we're familiar with this from the 10th parak of Psachim, where there the Mishnah discusses extensively the idea of a seba and how critical it is to the Seder. But over here, in terms of our Gemara, we're just discussing in the context of being able to be motzi another person. The Mishnah says that if they are in a state of heseba, so one person can make a bracha for the others. And the Gemara now comments on this. We begin with the Gemara. Amar Rav, Rav taught us, Loshanu ala bepas. This is only as it applies to bread. To buy heseba, where there's a heseba requirement of al yayin. But when it comes to wine, lo bai heseba, there is no requirement of heseba. So based on this viewpoint of Rav, for wine, heseba is not even necessary. Meaning, as even if we're sitting, and presumably even if we're standing as well, one can make a bracha for others and be mostly with others. What's the svar to make a distinction between wine versus bread? Not clear. The Gemara doesn't say, neither does Rashi. Perhaps it could just simply be based on the way that the wine was drunk. Wine was drunk in a more casual position, so therefore you don't need the kind of kviyas that you do for bread. That's a possibility, although I have not seen that by any of the Rishonim. Rav Yochanan Amar Afilu Yayin Nami by a Seba. Rav Yochanan is of the opinion that wine also requires a Seba. So according to Rav Yochanan, much like there's a Seba requirement for bread, there is also a Seba requirement for wine. Igida Amri, now there is a second version of this discussion, Amar Rav Loshanu Ala Pas. This was only taught as it relates to bread, the Mahanyulei Haseba, where there Haseba works. Aval Yayin La Mahanyulei Haseba. But for wine, Haseba doesn't work, meaning not even Haseba is going to work. And within the second version of the Gemara, comes out now that according to Rav, for wine, one person cannot make a bracha on behalf of other people at all, even in a state of Haseba. Rav Yochanan Amar Afilu Yayin Nami Mahanyulei Haseba, and Rav Yochanan is of the opinion that for wine, Haseba would work just like it would work for bread. If you compare and contrast these two versions of the Gemara, so Rav Yochanan basically comes out to be the same, that Haseba works for wine. It's just a question of the position of Rav. Rav really is a mikatsa el akatsa, from one end to the other in terms of the range of position of Rav. In the first version, Rav takes an extraordinarily lenient position that for wine, there isn't even Haseba required, meaning one can make a bracha on behalf of another, even if they're not in a state of Haseba. In the second version, Rav goes all the way to the other side of the spectrum, where Rav says that for wine, Haseba doesn't work. Not even Haseba is going to work, meaning one cannot make a bracha for others when it comes to wine. Again, the svar is behind these two positions of Rav. It's unclear. The Gemara doesn't give a svar, neither does Rashi. Continuing in the Gemara, Meisvei. The Gemara now is going to challenge based on a brisa. This brisa coming up right now is a Tosefta. It's in the fourth parak of Brachos. And this Tosefta is going to outline for us what is the general style, what is the general etiquette of a meal that took place back then. The brisa over here does not seem to be describing anything specific or special, meaning it's not a Yantav, it's not a Shabbos, it's just a regular meal. In fact, Rashi writes over here at the beginning of the brisa, kacha yuregilim. This is just simply the standard way in which they had a meal. Rashi also tells us that we're describing somebody who was wealthier and he's hosting a lot of guests, including a lot of poor people. And so the brisa over here gives us a basic structure of what the etiquette was, what it looked like. So ketzad seder haseba. So what exactly is the order of haseba? Orchi nechnasim yoshen al gabi safsalan v'al gabi katagios. Ad shichnesu kulam. So first we started in some sort of antechamber, some sort of foyer, where people would come in, they would be sitting down on seats or on benches, and basically waiting for everyone to arrive. So this foyer was basically the greeting room and the place where we'd be waiting for everyone to arrive. Evi olehem mayim, kol echa ve'echa notel yado achas. Water is brought to them, and each one of them washes a hand, a single hand. Balahem yayin, kol echa ve'echa mevarech la'atzmo. Wine then is presented to all these people while they're sitting waiting in the foyer room after they had their one hand washed, and each one of them would make their own bracha on the wine. Alu vehesebu. Then they go up into the main dining room where there they're going to do heseba, meaning they're about to sit at a meal. And so therefore the position is not sitting, but rather it's reclining. And water is brought to them. Even though each one of them already washed one hand for the drinking of the wine. So now they're going to be after washing their two hands because now they're about to eat bread. And the consumption of bread obviously requires the mitzvah of netilas yadayim, which is the washing of both of their hands. Balahem yayin, wine is brought to them again. Now, although, despite the fact that each one of them already made a bracha on the wine that they drank previously, nevertheless, they're going to be making a bracha again. But over here, one person can make a bracha on behalf of all of them. Now, the Gemara is going to stop here at this point in the Braisa, meaning there's more to the Braisa, but as far as the point the Gemara wants to make, it's already been made at this point of the Braisa, so let's go a little bit further than the Braisa. We'll come back and we'll discuss a couple of points. Kasha. So the Gemara says, let's go back to the first version of Rav. Where in the first version of Rav, Rav taught us that the Heseba is only required by bread, but when it comes to wine, wine doesn't even need Heseba, meaning to say that one can be motzi other people with a bracha of wine, even if they're not in the reclined position. Meanwhile, in the first part of the Braisa, when they were in the foyer, so each one of them had to make a bracha on their own, and that would obviously be difficult for the first version of Rav. Shani Orchim didaitu, didaitaihu lemeakir. So the Gemara says it's different. When they're in the foyer, so their mindset is not to be there, meaning what they plan on doing is leaving that foyer and entering into the main dining room. And because they know that they're not going to be there for an extended period of time, so therefore they don't have the proper intent. And even though Rav, who generally speaking is lenient regarding wine and does not require seba, but because their status of being in the foyer is such a temporary status, so therefore even without the seba, they still cannot make a bracha one for another, and each one is going to have to make a bracha for themselves. Lishna, the Gemara continues now, according to the second version, to Amar Rav Lo Shanu Ala Pasta Mahanya Leaseba Aval Yain La Mahanya Leaseba Kasha Seifa. Now, within the second version of Rav, where he was of the opinion that Heseba is not going to work, not for wine, so then that's a little bit difficult because in the second part of the Braisa, we're describing that once they get into the main dining room, so then one person can make a bracha for everybody regarding the wine. And in the second version of Rav, for wine, Heseba doesn't work. So how does that work? So Shani Hasam, so the Gemara says it's different over there. Demigu dekat mahanyalei Heseba lapas, mahanyalei Heseba layayin. So the Gemara says that we're going to have to answer that this Bryce is talking about an outstanding scenario. And that is that in the main dining room, there's going to be wine. There's also going to be bread. Now, by bread, everyone's in agreement that Heseba works. That was what the Mishnah taught us. And certainly, everyone's in agreement to that point. So because in the main dining room they're going to be utilizing a seba in order to be motzi others regarding bread, so in that circumstance, and only in that circumstance, will a seba work also for wine as well. The Gemara expresses it over here as a form of a migu. Migu generally means that since it works over here, so therefore it's going to work over there as well. We use it in the context of ne'manus, so a person has credibility, and when a person can make an argument that he's going to be believed on, he'll make another argument or he'll be believed on another argument that normally doesn't extend that credibility. So migu basically gives an extension. So over here, that's what the migu is operating over here, is an extension. Because the haseba is going to work l'gabe, the pasta haseba is also going to work l'gabe the yayin. But under normal circumstances, the haseba does not work by the yayin. So that's a way we could respond to it. Adkan, that takes us to the end of the sugya regarding whether or not haseba is needed by wine, works by wine, or maybe even in the second version of Rav, it doesn't even work by wine. An interesting part of the Braisa that I glossed over is that for the foyer, they had a drink of wine, and each one of them washed one hand for the drink of wine. Presumably the hand, obviously, they were holding the wine cup in. What is the purpose of that washing of the hand? So the Gemara does not make that point very clear. Neither does Rashi. If you take a look at the very top, Tosfos on the Amud, he writes that the reason why you're washing that one hand is mipnei kvod habracha. So Rav Tosfos describes over here that it's a function of the honor that we're giving to the bracha, meaning it's just not proper that you're holding a cup and making a bracha, and meanwhile your hand is dirty, so out of the cup of the bracha, so therefore you wash that one hand. Tosfos says this is not a tumah v'tahara issue, because we know, and Tosfos over here quotes the Gemara in Chulin, so we know that a person should not be washing his hands for fruit. This is not fruit, this is wine, but it's the same basic idea. And if somebody who washes his hands over fruit is referred to as gasei aruach, it's religious arrogance to do so. So Tosfos feels that this is not an issue of tumah tahara. That is Tosfos' explanation of the washing of the hands, washing of the one hand for that drink of wine. Anyway, we continue in the Gemara. Let's continue in the Gemara. The Gemara starts off balahem yain besoch hamazon. In the Mishnah, it said that for any wine that's drunk during the meal, so each one of them is going to have to make a bracha for themselves. Shalos ben zama mimema amru balahem yain besoch hamazon kol echa ve'echa mevarach la'atzmo. Why is it that wine that's drunk in the middle of the meal, so each one of them is going to have to make their own bracha? La'achar mazon, however, if wine is offered to them after the meal is over, and as we described in the Mishnah, after the meal is over, so there's another cup of wine that is drunk, this is before benching, and ech mevarach l'kulan, one person can make a bracha on behalf of all of them, and why should that be? Meaning, what's the difference between wine that is offered during the meal, where everyone has to make their own bracha, as opposed to if wine were offered after the meal, so one person can make a bracha on behalf of everyone else. Amar lahem hol ve'ein beis habli apanui. So Ben Zoma gives an answer, and he says that the wine after the meal, so their throats are not full. Meaning, he makes a simple distinction between the wine that's offered during the meal, people are eating, as opposed to the wine that's offered after the meal when nobody's eating. But even that answer of Ben Zoma requires a clarification. What difference does it make whether they're eating or whether they're not eating? So if you take a look at Rashi, Rashi writes, Hol ve'ein beis habli apanui, ein lev hamesubim, el hamavarech ela livloa. So Rashi just simply directs this as a point of kavana, of intention. Meaning that in order to be able to listen to somebody else's bracha and be motzi, using the other person's bracha, so one has to be in a state of intent, and he has to have kavana. And the way Rashi describes it is that while you're eating, you simply cannot have that kavana that's necessary. This is Rashi's explanation, and it also seems to be Tosfos' explanation as well. You can see Tosfos over here, who has a lengthy comment over here on whether or not during the meal, what if we shushed everybody during the meal? Tosfos gives the example where you say Savrima, Savrima, a number of Asai, or Tosfos' language is Savrima Rai. So under those circumstances, would it be possible to be able to make a bracha for everybody during the meal if we shushed everybody? Tosfos goes back and forth on that issue. Tosfos quotes Rabbi Noach Hanan. He quotes others as well on this topic. If you look at the end of the Tosfos, a really interesting ending to this Tosfos, he has the following comment. You could see it towards the bottom, Aval Tzarech Iyun Ksas. It's like the last eight lines of Tosfos. Tosfos does wonder about the following. Mei Havdalah, Shanu Mavdilim Va'omdim. So we make Havdalah, we make it in a standing position. That is the general Nihug of the Ashkenazim, circa 12th, 13th century. Hey, chanu pochum zeh et zeh miyayin, umi havdalah. So Tosfos wonders, how does that work? How can I make havdalah on behalf of other people if we are standing? Achari she'ein lanu, she'ein anu lo yoshim v'lo mesubim. We're not in a sitting position, we're not in a position of a seba. Now I'll also point out, before we go further than the Tosfos earlier in this parak noted that nowadays, obviously, our practice is not to do a seba at all. And so therefore, Tosfos noted that our yeshiva, that our sitting, is tantamount to the Heseba that's described in the Gemara. But anyway, so coming back to our Tosfos is bothered by the fact that Havdalah is going to be set in a standing position, which is nothing. That's not Heseba, that's not yeshiva, that's nothing. And how could it be that I could be mostly somebody else with Havdalah? V'shem yishlamer mitoch shekovim atzman kedei latzes yidei Havdalah, kabai nami akula milsa. Tosfos gives a suggestion, well, you know that for Havdalah, everyone knows that they have to be Yotzi with Havdalah. And so maybe because of that clarity of why we are here and the purpose of this Bori Pri HaGafen is not just a Bori Pri HaGafen, but it's also Havdalah. So maybe for that, people are now going to be directing their attention for those circumstances. And so therefore, we could waive the requirement to sit or to recline. Tosfos goes on, L'kach na'a v'tov l'mavdo v'gam l'shom m'shiyashu b'shas Havdalah. So Tosfos says, but I think it'd be better, or it'd be preferable for the people that are listening and the people that is saying it, from the person that's saying it, that they should be sitting during Havdalah. Sha'azia nira kekeva upoter osam. Tosfos says, because now we have the kfiyos, and now one person can exempt the other. And Tosfos over here is the beginning of a lengthy discussion of whether or not a person should be sitting or standing during Havdalah. And it is a primary source on this topic of what position a person should be when saying the Havdalah. Should he be sitting or should he be standing? So this Tosfos is a first source to turn to on this very topic. We go back to the Gemara. Vehu Omer al Hamugmar. In the Mishnah. So the Mishnah noted that the person who made the bracha on the wine is also given the opportunity to make a bracha on the mugmar as well. After the meal has come to a conclusion. After benching. So what they would do is they would burn incense and they would smell the incense and make a bracha on the incense. And the Mishnah told us that the one who made the bracha was the same person who made the bracha on the yayin. So midiktani vihu omer la mugmar. So the Gemara makes the following inference. The fact that it says that he is going to be making the bracha on the mugmar, michlal, di'ika adif minei. So what it sounds like now is that there is somebody else in the room that would have been a better candidate, and still you're going to give it to the one who made the bracha on the wine. Now, why should that be? Now, the next line of the Gemara, the Marashal takes out, we're going to follow his lead, and we're going to skip now to the word misayeya. So the Gemara says that we could relate this to a point that was made by Rav, and that is the following. At the end of the meal, you have what's called Mayim Achronim. Mayim Achronim, as we discussed back in the Gemara in Chulin, is an obligation to be done at the end of the meal in order to get rid of any of the salt that may be corrosive and may affect a person's eyesight. So then in the day, so they had the Mayim Achronim at the end of the meal in order to remove the Melech Sedomis, the corrosive salt. There is a discussion whether or not that continues to this very day. But in the meantime, however, certainly in the time of the Gemara, they practiced Mayim Achronim. Hanotel Yadav Tchila Ba'achrona. So the person who is going to be given the Mayim Achronim first, Hu Mizuman Labracha. So he started the Mayim Achronim, and therefore he's the one who's going to be dedicated to making the benching, meaning he's going to lead in the benching. The Gemara tells a story that supports this idea of Rav Rabbi Chia Abi Yasve coming to Rabbi Bisudasa. So we had Rav and Rabbi Chia who had a nephew uncle relationship, and they were both in front of Rabbi at a suud. The Rabbi was the Rabbi to both of them. This Rabbi, of course, being Rabbi Yehuda Anasi. Amale Rabbi LeRav Kum Mishe Yadech. Rabbi gives the following instructions to Rav, and that is to go wash his hands. Chazia Dehave Mirsas. Now when Rabbi Chia sees that his nephew started shaking and was nervous, so he understood that his nephew didn't understand the instructions of Rebbe. Rebbe told him to go wash his hands, as Rashi explains over here. So Rav interpreted to mean that A, Rebbe was commenting on his hands, maybe they were just simply dirty, or B, maybe Rebbe was giving him tochacha, rebuking him over the fact that he was eating too much. And so therefore, the instructions of go wash your hands was just simply a signal of stop eating. And at that point in time, Rav got very nervous. Amar le Rabbi Chia, so Rabbi Chia says to his nephew, Bar Pachse. The expression that Rabbi Chia uses often to describe Rav, it means the son of distinguished people. Ayein bebirchas mezona ka'amar lach. You misunderstood him. The whole point of him telling you, instructing you to go wash your hands, is because he wanted you to lead in the benching. And that's all he meant by that. He didn't mean anything bad by it. He wasn't reprimanding you. He just simply wanted you to lead in the benching. The purpose of the Gemara telling us the story is to reinforce the idea that when you are given one task, one duty, and you're starting one mitzvah, so then it's on you to go ahead and continue doing another mitzvah as well. And this goes back to the Gemara's primary question, which is that the person making the bracha on the ayin is also the one who's going to make the bracha on the mugmar, so why should it be him, even though there are other people in the room, and even if we're going to say that other people are just as deserving, or maybe even more deserving. So it's based on this idea that once you start a mitzvah, so then the next mitzvah also should be yours as well. Similar to the idea where the Gemara expresses elsewhere, Hamaschel b'mitzvah, anyone who starts a mitzvah, Omrim lo gemar, we tell them to finish the mitzvah. Not exactly the same idea as over here. Over here, they're not the same mitzvah, it's the different mitzvahs, but still, the idea is that once you're on a roll, so then you are afforded the opportunity to keep going ahead and making additional brachas. As long as we discuss the mugmar, it affords the Gemara the opportunity now to go over the halachas of birchas hareach, various brachas that are made over odors. We are going to be learning in detail the various different types of nuschas, various versions of brachas that are said over different aromas that come off of different items. As we will be seeing together in the Gemara, the nusach habracha is going to be contingent on what exactly the source of the smell is, and all those details are coming up ahead. The Gemara opens up the discussion over here with a simple question: when do you make a berachas hareach? So the Gemara over here is assuming now that we are describing the Mishnah scenario of burning the incense. So when we burn the incense, obviously the aroma is going to hit our noses, but before that happens, we're going to see a column of smoke coming up. Once we see the column of smoke coming up, we know now that the aroma is about to hit our senses. So, me'emas ha'mevarchin al ha'reach. So the question was, when do we make the bracha on reach? Specifically in our scenario of the burning of the mugmar, mishitala timraso. From the time that the column of smoke goes up. So Amalei Rabbi Zera l'Rava bar Yirmiyahu haloka arach. Now he asked the question, yeah, but you haven't smelled anything yet. And the questioner is asking, shouldn't you make the bracha only after you start smelling? So Amalei, so the response is, l'tamecha, now according to you, ha'motzi lechem in ha'aretz, demavarech. Imagine, now let's turn to another bracha sanenin, something as simple as ha'motzi. V'halo achal, and yet we're making the bracha before you ate. So, ela daite lemecha. Obviously, the brachas hananin is with the intent of eating, meaning I'm holding the sandwich in my hand. I'm going to make hamotzi, followed immediately then by taking a bite. Hachanami daite lorche. So, here too, it's the same thing that I see the column of smoke and I know I'm going to smell it in just a moment. So, therefore, the appropriate time to make a bracha is immediately before you smell it, when you see the column of smoke going up. Amr Bichir Bray de Abba Barnachmini Amr of Chista Amr Rav Amr La Amr of Chista Amr Ziri call Hamugmar's Mavarchan Allah Bore at Se Bisamim. When it comes to the Mugmar, the appropriate bracha is Bore at Se Bisamim. And as I mentioned just moments earlier, the bracha is going to be based on what is the source of the smell. So when it comes to Mugmar, so Mugmar is something organic, something that grows from the ground. And what you're doing, like wood chips, is you're burning it. And by burning it, so you are now producing the smell. But because it's coming from eitz, since it's coming from something which is growing from the ground, and it's tree-like, so therefore the correct bracha is borei atzei b'samim. As Tosfos over here points out, what's the chiddush of the Gemara? The chiddush is that even though right now it's currently being burnt, meaning it is wood, but at the same time it's going to be changed into ash. And obviously that no longer is wood. But still, because the smell is being produced as it's being burnt, so therefore the appropriate bracha is borei atzei b'samim. Chutz mi musk, the Gemara tells us, the notable exception is musk, shemin chayahu, shemavarchin ala borei minei b'samim. Since the musk comes from an animal, Rashi says it comes from the excrement of the animal, which is kind of difficult to understand how that could possibly be a pleasant odor. But anyway, regardless of where the musk is coming from, but it's coming from somewhere from the animal, and so therefore, since it produces a smell, and assuming that's a good smell, so the bracha is bori minei b'samim. Bori minei b'samim is the generic bracha of smell when we don't have a specific source in which it comes from. When it's not coming from a plant, but rather it's coming from some other source, so the bracha is going to be bori minei b'samim. So what comes out now from the Gemara is, the Gemara seems to state very clearly that anything that comes from a plant is going to be bori atzei b'samim, even if the smell is coming after it's burnt. Meisvei, the Gemara challenges based on the following braisa, in Mevarchim Borei Atzei B'Samim, Ela al afarsamon shall base Rebbe, v'al afarsamon shall base Kesar. When do you make a Borei Atzei B'Samim? When you are smelling the afarsamon. Now the afarsamon is a parsimon, it's the fruit. But over here, since we know that the bracha the Gemara is about to use is Borei Atzei B'Samim, so it's not talking about the fruit, but it's talking about the branches of the afarsamon, which apparently also gives off a very pleasant odor. The Brisa refers to the afarsamon of base Rebbe and base Kesar. Rashi points out over here, it doesn't specifically mean only these. It just happens to be that these are people of import and of wealth, and therefore they grew the afarsamon in their house. The al hahadash b'chomakom nahadas, doesn't matter where you get it from, meaning it's generally found very simply, and for these the bracha is going to be borei atzei b'samim. Now the girsa we have in our Gemara, the next word in the Gemara is tiyufta, which means that the Gemara is satisfied with the refutation, meaning that this braisa not only serves as a question, but a refutation of the position that was held by Ze'iri. Ze'iri says that even the mugmar, even though while it's burned, so you're turning the tree into ash, the bracha is going to be bereyat seba samim. And from the bracha that we learned, it sounds like no, that only when the wood is in its original state, then and only then the bracha is bereyat seba samim. But while you're burning it, the bracha would not be bereyat seba samim. So that seems to be the conclusion of our gemara over here, assuming that the correct yursa of our gemara is as it's presented over here. You can see Tosfos, where Tosfos quotes the Bahag has a different gears than the Gemara. The Bahag does not have the words to Yufta as part of the Gemara, and so therefore see Tosfos over here for a different understanding of the Gemara's conclusion. We continue in the Gemara, we're towards the bottom of Mem Gimel Amud Aleph, Amalei Rav Chisel, Rav Yitzchak, Haimashka Da Farsam on Maim Mevarchin Ilavei. The oil that secretes out of the parsman, what bracha do you make on it? Amalei Hachi Amar Rav Yehuda, Borei Shemen Artsenu. So Rav Yehuda is of the opinion that the bracha, the correct nusach of bracha, is the oil from our land. Amalei bar minei de Rav Yehuda. So the Gemara says, let's exclude Rav Yehuda from this discussion, the chaviv alei Eretz Yisrael. He has such a strong love for Eretz Yisrael, so therefore his position is going to be clouded by the fact that his love of Eretz Yisrael is going to necessarily include Eretz Yisrael as part of the bracha, and apparently the other Amoraim felt that that shouldn't be part and parcel of the Nusach HaBracha. Just a really interesting observation, and I don't know who to credit this observation, but Rav Yehuda, early in the Masechta, did not want to go to Eretz Yisrael. He lived in Bavel, and he felt that there was an imperative by the Navi that once we were exiled to the Bavel, we cannot leave Bavel and go back to Eretz Yisrael until a Navi tells us that we can do so. And remember, there were Talmidim of Rav Yehuda who wanted to make Aliyah and go to Eretz Yisrael, And they hid from Rav Yehuda because they didn't want Rav Yehuda to hold them back from going to Eretz Yisrael. So it's so interesting that our Gemara over here tells us that Rav Yehuda was a lover of Eretz Yisrael. He had extra love. He had extra chavivus for Eretz Yisrael. And meanwhile, it's the same Rav Yehuda. Presumably, it's the same Rav Yehuda earlier who wouldn't make Aliyah. Anyway, interesting observation. But the Lekuli Alma Mai. So the Gemara says, okay. So if we're not going to go with the Nusach HaBracha as reported by Rav Yehuda, what is the bracha that's going to be made on oil that secretes out of a fruit? So Amar Lehachi Amar Rav Yochanan Borei Shemen Arev. So the bracha as reported in the Gemara over here is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has made an oil that's sweet. Amar Rav Adar Bar Ava Hai Kishirta. The Gemara here talks about various roots. Kishirta Rashi describes as kosht. So costus, whatever that may be, it's included. It's part of the makeup of the keteris that's burned in the base of mikdash. But anyway, mevarchin alavei borei atzei b'samim. So again, it's a wood, and so therefore it's a borei atzei b'samim. Aba mashka kevisha. However, if it is the oil that has some pieces of the kosh inside of it, lo. So for that, you are not going to make a borei atzei b'samim. Rav Kahana amar afilo mishka kevisha. And Rav Kahana says, no, for mishka kevisha, even for this, for the oil mixed in with a little bit of the kosht inside of it, you're still going to make a borei atzei b'samim. Aval mishka tchina lo, but not for mishka tchina where the kosht is going to be totally pulverized. Nardai amar afilo mishka tchina. And Nardai is of the opinion that even for mishka tchina, even if it's ground up, the bracha is still going to be a borei atzei b'samim. As we turn now to the top of Mem Gimel Amud Beis. Amar Rav Gidol Amar Rav Hai Samlak. Jasmine Mevarchin Ilave Borei Atzei B'samim. So the bracha is Borei Atzei B'samim. Rashi gives a description of the jasmine plant. You can see the top Rashi for a detailed description. Amar Rav Hanana Amar Rav Hani Chalfei Diyama. Mevarchin Alayhu Borei Atzei B'samim. Chalfei Diyama, Rashi describes as the Shibold Nerd. That again, also used as part of the Kataris in the Beis HaMikdash. So it gives off a pleasant odor, and it is a hard plant-like substance, and therefore, Borei Atzei B'samim. Amar Mezucha Maikra, Vihi Halasa Magaga. And the Gemara now cites the Pasuk. Now, the Pasuk over here is not going to be describing the Shibold Nerd that we're currently describing right now. The Pasuk over here is going to be describing Pishtan, flax. But as Rashi points out over here, it must be that the Shibold Nerd is flax-like in its structure. And so therefore, whatever we're going to say regarding flax, we could use the same adjectives to describe the Shibold Nerd. Now, by the flax, the pasuk says, "V'hila sam agaga v'timrasam b'pishtei ha'etz." When Rachav took the two spies and hid them, she hid them amongst the pishtei ha'etz, amongst the trees of the flax. So you see that the Navi describes the flax as something which is tree-like, which then, assuming the Shibbol narrative is under the same category, so that means that we're going to treat it like a tree, which means that the bracha is going to be borei atzei b'samim. Hai narkom de gininusa. So Rashi describes narkom as a chavetzela sasharon, some sort of flower. So mevarchin alavei borei atzei b'samim. So if it's a garden variety, so it's borei atzei b'samim dedabra. If it's the wilder variety, borei asvei b'samim. It's going to be softer in its texture, and it's going to be more grass-like than it's going to be like stem-like. And so therefore, we're introduced now to a new nusach habracha, which is borei isvei b'samim. Isvei from the word esav, which means it's more grass-like. So for something which is grass-like, meaning it's very flexible, so the bracha is going to be borei isvei b'samim. Amar Rav Sheshet hani siglei. Siglei probably is something like violets. Mevarchin alayu borei isvei b'samim. So again, something which is grass-like, very flexible. Amar Marzucha Hayman de Marech be'esrog, someone who smells an esrog, o bechavusha or a quint, omer baruch shenasan reach tov bepeiros. So over here, because the aroma is being generated by a fruit, so therefore the correct bracha is going to be nasan reach tov bepeiros. Amar Rav Yehuda Hayman de nafik b'yom nisan. A person goes out in the beginning of the month of Nisan, vechazan ilei deka melavlavei, and they see the flowering of the trees as they begin the process of producing a fruit. Omer, so there is a bracha to be said, and that the bracha, as we know it, is called the Birchos Ilanos, and here it is being recorded in our Gemara, Mem Gimel Mid Beis and Brachos. Bracha to Hashem Elokeinu Melech Olam Shelo Chiser Balam Elklom, HaKadosh Baruch Hu has left nothing deficient in this world. Ubaro Brios Tovos VeIlanos, and has made wonderful creations and trees. Tovos Lehisna Osbehem Bnei Adam, so that we can delight in their growth. Amar Rav Zutra Bar Tovia Amar Rav Minayim Shemevarchan Al Areach. What is the source that teaches us that one is supposed to make a bracha on an aroma? Shenemar, the pasuk says, "Kol Hanishama Tehalalka." Ezadav Shanashama Nehenes Mimenu. What exactly is the item where the neshama and only the neshama is getting benefit from it? Ve'in Guf Nehenem Mimenu, but not the body. Haviyamar Zehareach. That's a reference to the reach. The reach. There is no caloric intake when it comes to the reach. It is just the hana of the smell, the sense of smell. But nevertheless, it demands a bracha. Va'amar Rav Zutra Bar Tovia Amar Rav Atidim B'churei Yisrael She'inu Reach Tov K'levanon. Eventually, what will happen is the B'chor Yisrael are going to smell like pleasant, like the Levanon. Shenemar Yachu Yon Kosav V'yu Kizayis Hodo V'reach Lo K'levanon. And he'll be the beauty of an olive, and the smell will be that of a Levanon. The Gemara over here is, according to the Pasuk in Hosea, forecasting that Bacharei Yisrael will also ultimately end up smelling like something extraordinarily pleasant. Amar Rav Zutra Bar Tovia Amar Rav Mai Dechziv Esekol Sher Yafeh Be'ito Melamei Shekol Echav Echad Yafeh Lo Kosh Baruch Hu Umnaso Befanav. Gemara quotes another statement of Rav Zutra Bar Tovia Amar Rav, and that is based on the Pasuk in Kohelas, that everyone's profession is beloved in front of a Kosh Baruch Hu. Amar Rav Papa Hainu Dam Inche. And Rav Papa says this fits in with an expression that's used by people, which is tala le kora ledavar acher. If you tie a kora around the neck of a pig, ihu didei avid. The pig's going to do, as we say here, what a pig does. Meaning, the way Rashi understands it, is that if you try to adorn the pig and make it look nice and put something around its neck that tries to make it look presentable, eventually what the pig is going to do is just jump right back into the mud. And the idea over here, the expression over here is that people's professions are beloved to the people who do them. I mean to say that if you have a person who enjoys doing a job which others may consider to be a dirty job, but for this person who's doing it, he really enjoys it. And so therefore, for that person, it is beloved to HaKadosh Baruch Hu that every job is taken. As Rashi explains over here, why is it so important? So Rashi says, because we want want all the work to be taken care of in this world. So we don't want the world to be chaser of anything, and so therefore there needs to be something like a tanner. And even though the tanner is a really dirty job and a really smelly job, but for the person who does it, he really likes it, he really enjoys it. And that's our Kodesh Baruch Hu is beloved. Another statement, Amar Rav Zutra Bar Tovia Amar Rav Avuka Kishnayim V'Yareach Kishlosha. when you're walking out at night, that's always a dangerous proposition. And so therefore, if you're accompanied by some light, so that would be helpful. Holding a torch is like two people walking. And the moon being out at night, that's like three people walking. The Gemara now has a technical question. When we say that a torch is like two, does that mean a torch is like two other people in addition to you, making a total of three? Or do we say no, that the torch is tantamount to two people, meaning, and that's including you? Tashma. So the Gemara says, I know the answer based on the following. Look at the next line, V'yarech kishlosha. The moon is like three people. If we're saying three people in total, including you, then that's very good. But if we're saying that it's three plus you, then it gets to the number four. And as the Gemara is about to argue, four doesn't mean anything. What does that mean? Four doesn't mean anything. When one person is walking by himself, so then he is under attack by the mazikin. So the mazikin will confront him. That's nira umazik, and actually assault him as well. Lishnaim, if two people are going out, nira, so the mazikin will certainly confront the inumazik, but the mazikin won't do any damage considering the fact that there are two of them there. Lishlosha, now if three people are walking, inu nira kol ikar. The mazik is not even going to make an appearance. So Allah shmamina avuka ishnaim bahadi didei shmamina. So here you see that obviously the halachic difference is between the number two and versus number three. So when we're saying that a torch is like two, it means like a two in total. And when we say the moon is like three, we mean like three in total. Continuing in the Gemara. The Amar Rabbi Zucha Bartovia Amarava Amrila Amarav Chana Barbizna Amarav Shimon Chasida Amrila Amarav Yochan Mishum Rabbi Shimon Ben Yochai. Preferable for a person to allow himself to be thrown into a furnace rather than publicly embarrassing somebody else. Minalan, where do we see this idea from? Meet Tamar. We learn it from Tamar Shenemar Vihimut Seis Vigomer. And the Gemara is making reference over here to the episode that occurs in Parshas Vayeshev in Perek Lameches, where at the conclusion of the story of Yehuda and Tamar, so Tamar was pregnant. Yehuda suspected that somebody else impregnated her. And Yehuda was about to have her killed. Tamar did not publicly announce that Yehuda was the father, but rather allowed Yehuda the opportunity to admit he was the father. And she was prepared to die in order to save Yehuda from public embarrassment. And we see from here that this is a rule. There is much discussion in terms of how do we understand this rule, that a person should rather die than cause public embarrassment to somebody else. It's not one of the Gemach Amuros. It's not one of the three Chataim that are mentioned in the 8th paragraph of Sanhedrin where one is supposed to give up his life rather than violate the Yisr of Shvichas Damim, Gilai Arayis, and Avodah Zarah. And presumably public embarrassment is not any one of those three. So then how do we understand our Gemara over here? So there is a Tosfos and Sota that addresses that question. He gives an answer. You can see Tosfos over there. It's on Daf Yud, I think. And there's a Rabbeinu Yonah to Pirkei Avos. Rabbeinu Yonah to Pirkei Avos in the third perek on the Mishnah of publicly embarrassing somebody. So Rabbeinu Yonah asks exactly this question. And Rabbeinu Yonah has a really interesting approach. And he argues that the three, the Gimel Chamuros that are mentioned in Sanhedrin, are the Avos. Those are categorically three categories. They're not just three Surim, but three categories. And with Avos, of course, you have Tolados, you have the subcategories. And Rabbeinu Yonah writes over there that publicly embarrassing somebody is a subcategory, it's a Tolada of Shvichas Damim, of murder. And so therefore, just like by murder, one is supposed to give up his life rather than murder somebody else. So Rabbeinu Yonah writes the same thing is true regarding public embarrassment as well. Rabbeinu Yonah gives examples for all three, where we find Tolados for Shvichas Damim and Gilai Arayis and Avodah Zarah. See the Rabbeinu Yonah in his parish Mishnayos on Pirkei Avos in the third parak for more on this topic. Tan Rabbanan, we're back to our Gemara halfway down on the Amud, on Mem Gimel Amud Beis. Hevila fanav shemen v'hadas. That person was given shemen v'hadas. After the meal is over, the shemen has a twofold purpose. Number one, he's going to rub his hands with the oil. And number two, he's also going to smell the oil. The hadasim have a singular purpose, and that is for the reyach that comes off of it. So Beis Shammai is of the opinion that first make a bracha on the shemen, then afterwards the hadas. And Beis Hillel is of the opinion that first you make a bracha on the hadasim, and then afterwards make a bracha on the shemen. Amram Gamliel ani achria shemen zachin la recha v'zachin la sichaso. Rabbi Gamliel says I'm going to take a position over here and basically tilt to the position. To whose position? So interesting Gemara, to Beis Hillel's position. He says, let's take a look at oil. When it comes to oil, zachin l'recha v'zachin l'sichaso. Oil, so not only produces a fragrance, but also is good to rub into your skin. Hadas l'rech zachin l'sichaso lo zachino. But when it comes to the hadasim, so it only produces a smell, but there's no sicha. And so therefore, I think that Beis Hillel is right, that first we should make a bracha on the shemen, and then only afterwards we should make a bracha on the hadasim. I'm Rav Yochanan Halacha Kedivrei Machria. Rav Yochanan says that's in fact the halacha, and the Gemara tells the following story. Rav Papa Ikal Lebe Rav Huna Bereid Rav Ika Aisel Kamei Shemen VaHadas. Rav Papa goes to the house of Rav Huna, and they present him after the meal Shemen VaHadas. Shakur Rav Papa Baruch Ahadas Bereisha VaHadar Baruch Ashemen. First he made a bracha on the hadasim, and then afterwards he made a bracha on the shemen. Amar Leilo Sevel Amar Halacha Kedivrei Machria. Now, have you not heard that over here in this case? We do, in fact, paskin like Beis Shammai. The Machria over here, a reference to Rabbi Gamliel, did in fact tilt towards the side of Beis Shammai. And Rav Yochanan said, that's in fact the halacha. And didn't you know all that? Amar Leh, so Rav Papa's response in his defense is, Hachi Amar Rav, this is what Rav said, halacha ke Beis Hillel. That the halacha in fact falls like Beis Hillel, and therefore he felt comfortable ruling like Beis Hillel, making the bracha first on the hadasim and then on the shemen. Velohi. And the Gemara says as follows. Now I'm reading the Gemara here like Rashi. Rashi says that Rav Papa quoted Rava, but the truth of the matter is Rava never said such a thing. And as Rashi understands the Gemara over here, Rav Papa just simply made up this memra of Rava. And l'ishtamute nafshehu David, and he only did so in order to save himself from the embarrassment. Rashi writes over here, I'm reading the Rashi inside Velohi, Lo Amar Rav Hilchasa Kebeis Hillel, El Rav Papa Ichsif Lefi Shita'a, Rav Papa was embarrassed because he made a mistake, V'hishmit Atzma B'kach. And he just simply slipped himself out by making up this excuse that this was what Rava said. Obviously, the way Rashi reads the Gemara over here is amazing and obviously extraordinarily problematic. Rav Papa, rather than just simply admitting that he was wrong, and just simply owning up to the mistake that he made, so he made up a memra of Rava in order to save himself from the embarrassment. Obviously, that's very difficult. It's not intellectually honest, and we generally assume intellectual honesty on the parts of the Amoraim. So obviously, the way Rashi presents the Gemara over here is extraordinarily difficult. Rashi's pshat in the Gemara certainly needs an approach, and so that is beyond the scope of the daf, but certainly needs a lot more consideration. Tana Rabban, the Gemara continue in the Gemara Hevilof named Shemen V'Yayin. We are now describing a case where oil and wine was handed to the person. So Beis Shammai says, take the oil in your right hand, take the wine in your left hand. Al Hayayin. First make the bracha on the shemen, and then afterwards make a bracha on the wine. Basil reverses. Take the wine, put in your right hand. Take the oil, put in your left hand. First make a bracha on the wine, then make a bracha on the oil. Now, what do you do with the shemen that is on your hands? So what you should do is you should wipe it. Where should you wipe it? A little bit odd, but wipe it on the shamash, on the person who's attending at the meal. What you don't want to do is you don't want to go out with your hands full of fragrance. The Gemara will explain in just a moment why that should be. So therefore, you should wipe it and wipe it on the shamash. Vim shamash tamach chacham. Now, if the shamash himself happens to be a tamach chacham, so tachu bekosel. So then just simply wipe it on the wall. So it's interesting. The Gemara is assuming that, in general, the shamash wouldn't mind being wiped with the oil. It would give him a good fragrance. The only consideration over here is that if the shamash also happens to be somebody that you are not allowed to apply the oil to, the fragrant oil to, so then wipe it on the wall. Now, it is embarrassing for a tamach chacham to go into the market where he is bathed in fragrance. Tanur Rabbanan, and more explanation coming up in just a moment. There are six things that are embarrassing to a Talmud Chacham. One, I'll say kishuhu mevusam l'shuk. A Talmud Chacham should not go bathed in fragrance to the marketplace. Two, I'll say chidi b'layla, don't go out alone at night. Three, I'll say b'manalim hamitulaim. Should not go out with shoes that have patches on them, patches that are covering up a hole in the shoe. Number four, Ayisapar im isha b'shuk. Should not be talking to a woman in the marketplace. Five, Ayasev b'chabur shel amei ha'aretz. Not to be seated with a group of unlearned people. And number six, Ayikanes b'achrono lebeis ha'medrash. Don't be the last one to go into the beis ha'medrash. All the six of these are going to be discussed in greater detail. Yeshomer, now there are those who also add to the list, Aflo yafsia psia gasa. He should not be taking long strides. Al yahalech become a zegufa, nor should he be walking in an upright posture. And these two also are going to be discussed and explained in more detail. The Gemara now is going to go through all six and explain all six items that a Talmud Chacham should not be engaged in. Number one, I say kishum mevusam l'shuk. He should not go out bathed in fragrance. Amar Rabbi Abba, b'reid Rabbi Chiya bar Abba, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, b'machom shechashudim al mishkav zachor. We're talking about where there's a community where, unfortunately, Mishkav Zachor was very prevalent in that community. So for the Talmud Chacham who goes out in that community and he's bathed in some sort of fragrance or cologne, so he will be suspected of trying to attract other men, and so therefore he has to be above suspicion, even if he's not actually interested in other men, but he has to be above suspicion. Amar Sheshes L'Amar Nala Bebigdo. The only consideration over here is when he puts the fragrance on his clothing, of Abigufo, but putting the fragrance on his body itself, Zeh Ma'avra Le. That's an antiperspirant. That's fine. Amar Papa V'Sa'aro Kibigdo Dami V'Amila Kigufo Dami. Now, Rapapa, there are two versions of what he says, but basically he wants to know what is the status of putting the cologne, the fragrance on his hair. Is that like his clothing or is that like his body? And two different versions of what Rapapa actually said. Next, Al Yisei Yechidi B'Layla Mishum Cheshada. He should not go out alone at night because of Cheshada's suspicion. Maybe he's out on some sort of rendezvous, and so therefore, he should not be going out alone at night, and he needs to be above suspicion. But then the Gemara just simply notes that if he has a shear and everybody knows that he has a particular shear that he's going to give, so certainly it's within his right to go out at night and go to the shear. He's not allowed to go out with tattered shoes. A Talmud Chacham has to be looking impressive in his appearance at all times. He is modeling behavior. He is a role model towards the Torah. And so therefore, he needs to go out looking, to say the least, not disheveled. And going out in tattered shoes is not the way the Talmud Chacham should be walking around. Misaila the Rabbi Chiya bar Abba Damer, Rabbi Chiya bar Abba Genai the Talmud Chacham, she said, b'menalim hametulaim. Rabbi Chiya bar Abba teaches us that a Talmud Chacham is not allowed to go out in tattered shoes. Inni v'ha Rabbi Chiya bar Abba Nafik, the Gemara is bothered by the fact that we do know Rabbi Chiya bar Abba did in fact go out with tattered shoes. Amar Mar Zutra, b'reid Rav Nachman, b'talei al gabei talai. No. The Gemara says that the issue over here is when the shoes are so tattered that there are patches, and on top of the patches there are more patches. Under those circumstances, it is not becoming a Talmud Chacham. But for just a single patch on the shoes, the Gemara says that's something which is excusable. V'lo amran ela bipanasa. The Gemara also makes a differentiation between the upper parts of the shoe versus the soles of the shoe. Upper parts of the shoe which are exposed and can be seen by others, so therefore that is not becoming a Talmud Chacham. But if it's a part of the shoe that is not readily seen by others, so then there's no concern. Also, the Gemara limits the halacha. This is only true when he's going out with these shoes. He can walk around his house with these shoes. That would not be a bizayon. And finally, one last proviso of the Gemara is that in the winter months, it would be okay to go out with these tattered shoes. Rashi points out over here, the ground is so muddy. People are not going to be seeing the patches on the shoes during the rainy season. And so therefore, there'd be no problem with him walking around with them during the winter. Next, Ayisaperi Misha B'Shuk, a Talmud Chacham is not allowed to be speaking to a woman in the public. Amar Rav Chisda V'Afilu Hi Ishto. Even if that woman happens to be his wife. Again, for the casual observer, he may not know that he's speaking to his wife, and so therefore he will start suspecting this Talmud Chacham. Again, the idea over here is that Talmud Chacham has to be above suspicion. Tayinami Hachi Afilu Hi Ishto. Braisa supports this as well. Braisa says, even if it's his wife, I feel he be tov, even if it's his daughter, I feel he achaso, even if it's his sister, lefisha ena kol bikim, bekrovasav, not everybody knows who he's related to. The al yase bechabur shal ame haaretz, next, Talmud Chacham is not allowed to hang out with the ame haaretz, my tamid dilma asila am shuche basrayu. So the Gemara over here gives a really simple explanation, but it's very important, and that is the peer pressure that is created and the influence that's created when hanging out with a certain group. Obviously, we're all going to be affected by the groups of people that we associate with. And if he's associating with Amei Haaretz, so even though he himself is a Talmid Chacham, but he's going to be negatively influenced. He shouldn't be the last one into the Beis Medrash. Mishum dekarolei posheya. People will be describing him as a posheya. Or in another girsa of the Gemara, atzel. In other words, bad words are going to be used to describe him. Obviously, nobody should be saying anything about him, and nobody should be speaking such lashon hara. But the point is that when a Talmid Chacham behaves in such a manner, and he is a noted Talmid Chacham, so once again, it speaks to the idea now that he's no longer an ambassador to the Torah. The Yeshomim Aflo Yafsiya Psiya Gasa. Now we're going to go over the last two points, even though these are not the six, but still these are addendum points that some add on. He shouldn't be taking wide strides. The Amar Mar Psiya Gasa tells Echad Mitav Kaf Mim Or Einav Shel Adam. What happens is that if a person takes wide strides, it diminishes his sight. Diminishes his sight because taking the wide strides are a sign of arrogance, and so it diminishes from his ability to see Maitakanti. What do you do? La Hadre Bekedusha Debe Shimsha. The way Rashi understands the Gemara over here, the Takana, the way to remedy the situation is by drinking the Koshal Kiddush on the night of Shabbos. There are others who explain the Gemara differently. Continue in the Gemara, just to finish up the daf, Vayahalech becomes a kufa. A person is not allowed to walk with an upright posture. Da'amamar, Malach becomes a kufa. Somebody who walks in an upright posture, Afilo Arba Amos, even if it's just for Amos, Kilo Dochek Raglesh China. It's ki'ilu, it's as if you're pushing away the feet of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, de'chziv, melech al-aretz kevado, HaKadosh Baruch Hu fills the entire world. Now, obviously, all this is to be understood by Derech Mashal, and the point of the Gemara is that when you're walking with an upright stature, so that, once again, shows arrogance and haughtiness, and it's as if you're not leaving any room for HaKadosh Baruch Hu, who fills the entire world, and so that also is not reflective of the behavior of a Talmid Chacham. Let us just simply recap the daf. On the Amun Aleph, the topics that we discussed about were Haseba as it relates to Yayin. Haseba obviously is a way of connecting people for the bracha on bread. Is it also going to work for wine as well? So it's a machlokes between Rav and Rav Yochanan, and there are two versions of that machlokes. And then we saw a brisa regarding the standard etiquette of how they had a meal. And the brisa certainly seems to support Rav Yochanan and presents difficulties for Rav, but the Gemara defended Rav on both sides of the brisa. Again, we cite an interesting Tosos. Well, not yet. The Gemara also in the Amud Aleph talked about wine that's drunk during a meal. Any wine that's drunk during the meal, so you cannot be motzi other people, even if you're in a position of a seba. And the Gemara's explanation is because people's mouths are full during the meal, and therefore cannot concentrate on the bracha that's being stated. Tosos over here has a lengthy discussion on this point, and Tosos also here has a discussion regarding what should be the position during Havdalah. Should you be standing or sitting? He notes that the minhag is standing, but Tosfos endorses the idea that you should be sitting. The Gemara then launched into a lengthy discussion regarding the Mugmar. First, the Gemara commented on who should be making the bracha on the Mugmar, the one who made the bracha on the Yayin, because once he made one bracha, you should roll him into making other brachas as well. And then the Gemara went into a lengthy discussion regarding the various nuschos of the Reach, and it depends on what is the source of the Reach, which will determine what exactly is the Bracha. The Gemara talked about the source of the Bracha coming either from something which is wood or wood-like, like Pishtan, Barei Atzei Besamim, something which is flexible, like a leaf, Barei Isbei Besamim. Gemara also spoke about the scent that's produced by an oil, Barei Shemen Arev, and the Gemara also talked about a scent that comes from a fruit. That's Nasan Reach Tov Beperos. The Gemara also addressed that, and there, if the smell is coming out from anything other than these items, so then you operate with a generic bracha of Barei Minei Besamim. Onto the Amud Beis, the Gemara quoted many different statements of Rav Zusha Bar Tuvia Amarav, some of them having to do with Reach, but a lot of them going off the topic, but because it's the same Bab Merma, so the Gemara strings them all together. And finally, the Gemara talked about a Talmid Chacham and the conduct of a Talmid Chacham, and the Gemara cited six things that a Talmid Chacham should definitely avoid, and with a possible additional two other items.